Well, hello. Welcome to the Gooder Podcast. I am your host, Diana Frike. As partner and CMO of Retail Voodoo, an award-winning branding agency, I have met and worked with some of the most amazing women in the naturals industry, food, beverage, wellness, and fitness. As such, I decided to create the Gooder Podcast to interview these great people and subject matter experts and have them share their insights and expertise to help businesses all around the world become gooder. I'm very excited to introduce my guest today, April Seiler, correct? Seiler?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, that's right. Who is the CEO of 8 Greens, a globally experienced food and beverage brand builder specializing in driving health and wellness and innovation. The 8 Greens brand is experiencing triple digit growth by delivering an easy and convenient way to build immunity and boost overall health. Prior to joining 8 Greens, April was the Senior Vice President of Marketing and Global Development for Califia Farms, spearheading all U.S. marketing in addition to executing all operational aspects of the global business startup. April previously led marketing strategy and sales at The Chia Company, where she provided creative direction for brand identity, conceptualized and designed world-first innovation, Chia Pod. April also played professional football in football. She played professional basketball. I just threw that in there. Professional basketball in Australia and Europe, rode for Melbourne University Boat Club, and has a passion for nutritious foods. Welcome, April. How's New York today? How are you?
New York is great. Spring has arrived in New York today. So things are looking up, and spirits are definitely higher in New York with the weather change than I've seen for a while.
Yeah. Yes. And I'm curious at this point now, we're at that 1 year mark of the pandemic. Are people tiptoeing around? Are people out on the streets a bit more? Is there a sense of ease with things right now?
Yeah, definitely people are out and about more with the weather change, and outdoor dining has been really popular. And I think, you know, there's a lot of young people out and about in New York at the moment. I think they've either had COVID or, you know, work in industries where they've been able to access the vaccine. But we're certainly seeing even today, yoga studios are opening up and things are getting back to being a bit more active.
Gosh. Wow. I can't even believe it. Well, let's, before we get into some of the good stuff, not that this part isn't good, but why don't you tell us a little bit about 8 Greens? What is the brand about and why does it exist?
Yeah, so 8 Greens was founded by Lady Dawn Russell, and Dawn, you know, the genesis for the brand came around. She was unwell in her 20s. She had cancer, and actually discovered that the thing that had the biggest impact on her return to health was changing her diet, and in particular the consumption of greens on a daily basis, and really making a dedicated effort. And the 8 Greens that became the brand were the 8 greens that she, you know, found she could really, when she was at her weakest point, could really feel the impact that they had on her ability to get through a day. So that was the inspiration for the brand and the product. And when she got to turn it into a company, really was focused on, okay, so there are other green supplement products out there, but none that taste fantastic. So she really focused on taste innovation, and the format being the effervescent tablet, which is our first product format, and able to get it into that taste great solution that also offers, you know, the hydration because it's dropped into, you know, 8 ounces of water. So, that was the unique difference for 8 Greens. And I came into 8 Greens just a year ago at the start of the pandemic and just saw, you know, great brand, great tasting product being the genuine innovation. And then access, you know, it's a digitally native brand. So, having the .com and having the Amazon channel there, I saw, you know, a really great opportunity to accelerate growth.
Well, I want to explore this mostly about the entry, how the product first entered into kind of consumer visibility, and then how you guys have leveraged it, especially now. My not so secret within my own little community of people is my husband is a huge fan of 8 Greens, and we originally found 8 Greens at Nordstrom, which at the time was considered. That was alternative channel for a supplement type of product. And so that was the original strategy. Was that identified, or was it kind of luck of the draw? Was it a relationship?
It was really innovative. I think Dawn was certainly ahead of the curve there in really thinking through beauty wellness, not how I would approach it from a category perspective, but really just from a consumer perspective, and seeing that in her life, the biggest impact that she saw and the benefits-driven impact was people were asking her why was her skin so vibrant. And so she was actually really innovative in this very early stage beauty from the inside. And, you know, back then it was 2015-16, where we were just starting to see, you know, makeup coming down in priority and skincare coming up. I think you saw it with shelf space, you saw it with the trends and how people were preferring less makeup and looking for a bit more of a natural look. And then Dawn was right at the start of that. Well, the next phase of skin first, makeup second is actually, you know, wellness on the inside first, then skin results, and then, you know, makeup as a third after that. So yeah, she was really early in that. And actually I believe she was either the first or one of the first few to really launch this whole new section, which is now beauty wellness or beauty supplements.
That category is certainly changing. I mean, first of all, there's a retail brand called Blue Mercury that carries your product line now. I see it in there. That's kind of, there's a whole section for that now. And then we also have some, I don't know if this is came first or is following behind, but you've got Goop and you've got Poosh, kind of the same thing, where that beauty and wellness are no longer split apart. They're absolutely in alignment. And is this just how the market is going? Is this where you see your consumer at this point?
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's just going to continue to evolve with the consumer really thinking through, you know, their daily ritual of, you know, what they're consuming, how that makes them feel, and then the effect that has on their appearance as well. I think it's just going to evolve. I see a future where, you know, you walk through retailers like Sephora today and you see the store is pretty much now 50-50 makeup to skincare. It didn't used to be that way.
Yeah.
It was makeup, skincare was smaller, and then beauty wellness. Yeah. So I think where 5 years ago where skincare was, I think in another 5 years we'll see it a third, if not makeup being further reduced and wellness increased.
Really? That's very interesting. Well, so let's switch a little bit here, you know, away from the product just a little bit. Last year was a big year for you in many ways. One of the first, of course, being the pandemic, and then you became a CEO during the pandemic. And I'm sure there were other elements too, but I just kind of, that 1-2 punch, big seismic moves in your world. How are you doing during this? How's it going? How did it go? Talk a little bit about that. Share with us what that journey was like.
Yeah, look, I just, I really felt fortunate at the start of the pandemic to be presented with an opportunity to really grow my career. I, you know, look around and, you know, a lot of us are in the same boat, whether it's food or beverage or supplements, where we're just really fortunate to be in an industry that's grown. And, you know, so I just really was grateful for the opportunity and then just really leaned in to execute on the growth that was there, because we, you know, were exactly at that right time of people looking for anything they could get their hands on that was going to improve their general health. And it was, you know, do you remember when the pandemic first sort of broke and there was these early articles about don't look to supplements and supplements, you know, let's not get carried away here. And then the World Health Organization actually reduced and removed any of that messaging, because as we got into the pandemic, we saw that people who had generally better health were actually faring better. And so they actually removed any advisory saying, let's not take supplements, to then you saw Fauci actually recommending vitamin D. So it was this huge shift in a really compacted short amount of time. And we just, you know, we saw the results of that with all of us in the supplementation space, you know, having increased sales and just trying to keep up, you know, with the consumer demand, which then, you know, there was a lot of you know, supply chain issues and flow on effects to ingredients availability and just working through all of that. But, you know, I've just really embraced those challenges as how lucky we are to be facing them. You know, and I think just that attitude with the team of these are good issues to be having, let's just keep working through it, has seen us, you know, as a young company, fare pretty well this year, and just, you know, tackle the challenges as they come in a very practical way, and just try and, you know, make the most of the growth in sales and opportunity there.
I suspect, I don't know if this is true or not, but I want to say in the last year it was the fastest that as a human population, at least in modern memory, where we saw science changing just so. I mean, most of the time for the government or an NGO to go, take supplements, don't take supplements, it's often years of recommendation. Here we were seeing changes one right after another. And I wonder, for you in the supplement industry or in the wellness industry, was there a bit of whiplash? Were you guys communicating with each other more than you usually would have just to kind of get your bearings straight? Or was it just treading water, you know, trying not to go under because of the demand?
Yeah, I think all of the above. You know, I think that the pandemic, you know, it was like everybody's sort of like chief digital officer accelerant, right? You know, we just saw things, you know, such a dramatic shift in the rate of people's awareness and demand for product shifting. And then, you know, that had the flow and effect of things that we thought would take us, you know, X amount of time to execute, just really bringing it back and saying, well, you know, if we need to increase, how can we do this as fast as possible? You know, we've done things in our business that would be unthinkable before, like, oh, that pack's not available. Let's just switch the pack, right? Let's just go with something that is available and get it out there and make the sales.
Right.
These are not like, I am from a marketing background, you know, just dropping and changing your brand's appearance like that. But, you know, when you have that flexible attitude and how quickly you can make things happen to capture the opportunity. So, you know, certainly whilst we've been facing such a terrible health crisis, I think that, you know, it's definitely changed the business world forever, and it's certainly, you know, the things that we've achieved at 8 Greens, and then me personally in my role have just been, you know, very eye-opening to how, if you rethink things, what you can achieve.
Yeah. I think that we've all, as marketers and brand owners, businesses, have seen that the consumer is a little bit more flexible. Yeah. At least they have been this last year. I know for myself, there's a few products that I ordered that were DTC, and the form changed and the label changed a handful of times over the last year. And there was a little tag that came along with it and said, global demand is is creating a little bit of a mess here. Please bear with us while we get our hands on our normal containers. And I was like, oh, the product still works the same. I'm fine. Mm-hmm. So it's a black container this time, or black with a white cap or whatever. I mean, it was pretty funny.
Yeah, we had exactly that. We had, a 10, yeah. a 10 tube. We, for a short period of time, we switched to a 15 tube, and then we were doing, the 30 packs of people got 2 15 packs instead of 3 10 packs, and they were fine with it.
Yeah.
I don't think we got one complaint. Yeah. And people got it. I think that's one of the benefits of now people being more tapped into supply chains and understanding how brands do their sourcing beyond, just the olden days of going and buying it in the supermarket, people really thinking through supply chains. And so there's definitely been, we've seen that understanding there, and that's allowed us to just have this, super flexible mindset for sure.
Mm-hmm. Now, your role with 8 Greens is for as a first-time CEO, and I want to kind of tap back into sports here. This might feel like a non sequitur, but you played competitively, basketball, not football. And when you think of this last year, or maybe it's your entire career, do you feel like there are any lessons or skills that came with you from the court into this last year, or into the corporate world said differently? Is it helping you? Do you feel like you have a different way of looking at opportunity and working?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's changing too. I think, I sort of had this professional career in basketball for a number of years. And then when I started my business career and made that first transition, I definitely, the team, team focus and team and actually enjoying a team environment that comes from the sports background, all the analogies about how to win, how to, stay focused and disciplined. All of that in the early stages of my career was super important. And then it's actually changing now that I'm, that was sort of in my late 20s and in my 30s. And now I'm moving into that next phase of my career and taking on, the CEO position. It's all happening again. I think that I saw in basketball that I got to this stage after playing, competitively at a high level for 10 years. Towards the end of my days in basketball, I became a lot smarter. I could read the play a lot better. Mm. Things seemed to slow down. Mm-hmm. I felt like I looked back at myself in basketball 10 years and I'm like, I used to waste so much energy. I used to be running around, and just not be able to read the play. And I feel like now in my career I'm getting to that point that I got to in basketball where I could read the play better and things slow down. And now I'm there in my career and I look back to myself 10 years ago and I feel sorry for myself back then. And I feel, in some ways, like very reflective and how I was in my late 20s. And I think I did rush things. I did feel like everything was, coming at me, and I did have those times where it all felt a bit too much. And now I definitely have that same feeling of it really slowing down. I can read the play better. I know what's going to happen. I can take shortcuts. I can circumvent things happening before they do. Definitely has helped me and continues to help me and evolve how I reflect back on my sporting career to now my leadership position.
Yeah. There's some of that, when you do look back on your 20s, as I think of, for me, I would better describe myself as a little bit more of a spaz. I don't know how to explain it. I was constantly trying to prove myself. And, I'm in my, now I'll be 50 here this next year. And so 25 years ago, business was still run a little bit more traditionally. And women, the only women that I saw that were, at least where I was working at the time, that were making any headway into the C-suite and the VP level were the ones that had approached business more like a man did. Sports definitely helped, but there was this kind of way that you had to be. And so I was trying on the hats. Does this style work? And while I was in constantly trying to prove to myself and everybody else that I was working with it, I have brought value to the organization or the project. And sometimes I look back and I go, oh, that poor soul. And then at the same time, the amount of learning that I got from that, nobody can tell you that learning. You kind of have to go through it. Hey,
mm-hmm. You have to go through it. Yeah. And I totally hear what you're saying about, you know, back 20 years ago in my career, I definitely saw that same thing around. We were still trying to navigate in a business world mm-hmm. around traditional stereotypes of women. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And back then it didn't make sense to me, and I just didn't have the language. You know, I remember very, very early on in my career having a negotiation skills workshop and the mm-hmm. instructors and the male colleagues talking about how it's great to have women in negotiations for their, you know, feminine qualities and you know, how you can use it. And I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? It's great to have women in negotiations because we're great negotiators, right? And so 20 years ago, the way that they were talking about women was made me uncomfortable, and I just didn't have the language to be able to, you know, try and dismantle those stereotypes and actually call them out for what they are. Mm-hmm. You know, and look, to some extent, we're still there. It's improving, but we're still dealing with it. That's for sure.
Yeah, for sure. So when we kind of go back to this, how you got here, there's a little bit of how you got here. Mm-hmm. You entered the CEO world from a marketing background. It's a little bit different than what we traditionally see. We tend to see people coming from a finance or operational background, or they come in with a traditional MBA, masters in their business. They're charts and graphs people a little bit more. Marketing can be charts and graphs, but I think from your perspective, you come in with that from a little bit more of the creative and the strategic side. How do you feel that helps you in this role?
Yeah, I think it has really helped me, you know, because as marketers, we're obsessed with the consumer feedback, consumer data, and the rate in which business is changing now, being, you know, we've been obsessed with the consumer back when we only had TV and print and we had to, like, find all these clever ways to understand them. And now we have all of the data at our fingertips. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I just think that actually when I look at the way that business has changed in the past, you know, even 5 years in particular with Instagram and Facebook and what we've been able to achieve through, you know, this merging of paid and earned media in social media, that is actually equipping, you know, marketers to become, you know, in my opinion, some of the best people to drive business forward and drive strategy forward because the rate of change that you can influence a business with when you're in touch with these tools and in touch with that consumer feedback, it's just so, so, so powerful. And I think, you know, it's not that long ago that we were, you know, depending on consumers, you know, panels of 100,000 people scanning what they bought at home, you know, and this is how we were getting our insights to where we are today. I think that we're going to see more and more, particularly coming out of the pandemic where there's this increased opportunity. I think that creative mindsets have actually been undervalued in the past cycle of business, and I think that coming out of the pandemic, you know, boards are going to really realize that there's this opportunity for even for businesses that are doing well to really reinvent themselves according to where the consumer is, you know, in this moment. So I think that, you know, being a having this marketing background was actually a great cadetship into my role as CEO. And I had a lot of people, you know, sort of, oh, you must be overwhelmed, or you must, you know, there must be a lot to take on. I'm like, I was pretty well versed from, you know, kind of being at the table, you know, at the same table as my operations colleagues and my finance colleagues and my sales colleagues, and really working through problems that drove the business with that consumer lens, I think was a great training ground for it, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, when we do, when our firm does brand strategy, we often are told that we approach it quite differently because we go all the way down into the business, obviously, because from the operations standpoint, you can only impact, you can only push so far on margin, and you can only push so far on productivity, and then there's no more movement. So where's your biggest opportunity for growth? It's for reaching out and finding a new consumer, or innovation, which is also very consumer centric. And what we typically find is sometimes we see that the operational people are a little bit handicapped because they're not necessarily looking at the bigger picture the way that you're articulating. So it's fun for me when we get to work with a CEO or a C-suite that has a really great understanding of marketing in its global world, and not just like design. Design is a very specific component within all of branding, but and it's very specific talent to be able to translate strategy into something that communicates effectively with the consumer. It is a skill set for sure, but it is very small in here. So I love that, you know, you came from sort of here and then it's just grown this way, and that's your foundational knowledge base, so to speak. Is that an
inaccurate assessment? That's it. Yeah, no, it's exactly. As a marketer, we know how to drive growth. Absolutely. We know how to drive growth and create growth opportunities with the consumer, and then translate that into what our product offerings are. So that's really, I mean, and I think that that's the part that a lot of CEOs struggle with, to be honest, is how to create growth. So in this environment, you know, that I've kind of found my home in, which is, you know, wellness products, where there's just so much opportunity for growth, I think that if you're not growth oriented, and you see it, you know, you see it with certain finance expertise and certain operations expertise, you know, they're just not oriented towards, you know, taking the risks involved to create a growth environment. So it's really important. And I think you know, having that balanced approach of, you know, I've over my career you know, pushed the needle too far the other way and taken too many risks and driven growth in a way that, you know, then becomes challenging to the sustained operations of the business. And so, you know, it's like, but you have to go through that piece to then understand how to deliver sustainable growth and grow at a rate that is always, you know, you coming to the end of the quarter and making sure that you're in balance and things are going to go wrong, but that, you know, the things that go wrong, you get ahead of them so that you may have a bumpy month, but not a bumpy quarter, and certainly not, you know, ruining your whole year. So yeah, I think that having that experience of being able to drive sustainable growth, I think is just key.
Agreed. Well, I want to step back into this leadership role. We touched on it a little bit of, you know, we've come a long way, and there's still some ways to go in regards to kind of the traditional roles and of leadership within our industry. I feel like we were going in a good direction, and then naturals exploded, and we had this shift of people from conventional into naturals, and a lot of that, the old ways came into our industry along with it, and that is kind of a little bit more male leadership. A little bit more male leadership at the helm, so to speak. We talked about this briefly when we were kind of planning this call. And on the topic, we were kind of talking about, you know, some tools or some ways our best allies men are using to help promote us women, people of color and other represented groups. Can you talk to that a little bit? Like, where, for those that want to be doing better and may not know where to start, do you have any tips?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, I've just seen all too many times in my career, male colleagues, you know, preferring for one reason or another, whatever the intentions are, just preferring, whether it's the company of men or just, you know, kind of reducing the decision-making down to essentially a group of guys that, you know, all look the same.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, the first thing to do would be really focus on not excluding the women at any point in the the business development. And I think that, you know, the younger, I've learned so much from Gen Z. They have these terms, exclusion, right? Which, and favoritism, exclusion and favoritism. We didn't have these terms. We just accepted that the boss had their favorites and the women didn't get invited to certain meetings. And that was, you know, we just kind of like put up with it. And I think learning this language from Gen Z, they do not put up with it for 1 minute. They're calling you out.
No.
They're calling everybody. Mm. And I think I've really learned from that. So, yeah, and I just ask, you know, our male colleagues and allies to really kind of pull this mindset in and also learn from Gen Z and not exclude women from the discussion. Don't exclude us from the dinners. Don't exclude us from, you know, the opportunities to travel together when that all opens up and the opportunities to have, you know, be involved in the chat before the meeting and the chat after the meeting. So, yeah, just don't exclude us. Bring us in. Bring us into the table. And if we're not there, pause and say, hang on, let's go and get these other people around the table, because it's going to be a much more robust and rich discussion if they're here.
Yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, that's the primary goal, of course, of this podcast. And the secondary goal is diversity in just in general. We can't take care of consumers at large if there's only one or two types of people in these major initiative conversations. I think that's just a really great POV is to, or point of view is to just always look around and go, do we all have the same point of view?
Yeah.
Maybe we need to have somebody else come into this conversation.
Yeah, that's just it. And I'm seeing our retail partners take great steps in this area, actually, and be a lot more overt with asking, you know, because it's a whole, you know, improving the status quo and it's a whole of team effort. It's retailers, it's us as suppliers, it's us as consumers.
Yeah,
we all have to do better.
Yeah.
And I'm actually seeing our retail customers, you know, being a lot more overt in how we as a brand owner are considering Black guests, how we're considering minorities in our product offerings, how we're communicating, are we being inclusive in our marketing, and actually making sure that that's part of, you know, communications back to them and our ability to increase our business. And they're being very overt that they'll deprioritize brands that are not taking this seriously or thinking that,
really?
Thinking that, you know, kind of in the all lives matter type of ground.
Are you at liberty to disclose maybe one or two of these retailers that you think are just really doing an absolutely amazing job in this regard?
Yeah, absolutely. Target, you know, I think Target have been ahead of the curve for a while in terms of multicultural marketing, multilingual marketing. We looked to them when I was at Calafia, and we looked to Target as really, you know, they were definitely ahead in having a greater diverse offering across different regions in America, having bilingual advertising, yeah. making sure that Black guests in Target were considered, whether it's with greeting cards, you know, and representation of Black families in greeting cards and these types of things. So I, you know, really recognise that Target has been ahead for a number of years, and I think that that's only accelerated over the past year as we've seen a greater, you know, greater call for diversity across the board.
Well, popping back to this Generation Z, I too have, I'm very excited about this cohort, frankly. I think they're going to keep us all on our toes. I know that you're keen on mentoring this group. Is there any guidance that you find yourself giving consistently to this cohort? And is it different than any other cohort?
It's interesting you say that guidance to, it's, I almost find myself giving guidance to more my peers and older age groups about how to, you know, almost get out of their way, like how to learn from them. Don't teach them to be like us because we didn't get it all right. And I think, you know, I'm constantly giving advice to, you know, I've got people like, oh, this generation, they don't understand. They don't work hard enough. They don't, they want it all. And I thought, well, actually, you know, I was privy to an amazing conversation of people in their mid-20s about how they don't ever want to be workaholics, how it's not great for their mental health. And they were almost sort of like bragging to each other about how good their sleep is and their REMs. And this was kind of like, I was listening to a, like a Gen Z date going on, and I just thought, how fantastic, you know, this is amazing, and we can actually learn a lot from this generation. So, you know, there's definitely that. And I, but I do think, you know, in terms of paying it forward, I had in my mid-20s, I had some great leadership opportunities and just being given more responsibility. So I think that that's something that I'm really passionate about is when I see people in their mid-20s, you know, really trying to start to take initiative in their career, it doesn't have to look a certain way. They don't have to promise to be working till midnight and what have you. You know, if they're finding ways to be smarter and getting their work done, just really loading up the responsibility on them. And, you know, if they want to take on more and have more opportunities to learn. And I think the other thing about Gen Z that's so different from millennials is they love feedback, right? They're kind of, what I found is it doesn't matter if it, and they want it immediately and frequently. Millennials, we had to, you know, it was all kind of like dance around the feedback a little bit and make sure that it was, you know, really positive all the time. Gen Z, you can say, look, you kind of missed the marquee. We're going to need to do this again. And they're totally fine with it and actually really hungry for that feedback. I was reading something that it comes from, you know, being of the internet age where everything you're putting out there, if it's getting likes, feedback, comments, you know, they've been raised in this way to really be mindful. We were all told that, you know, the internet was going to make us antisocial and, you know, not considerate of people. Right. But I'm actually with the Gen Zs now first entering the workforce. I'm seeing the complete opposite. I think that they're more socially aware, more conscious of their colleagues than any generation before them. So, I love them.
I think a part, another part that we see there is with technology, they grew up in a world of imperfection and revs, you know, meaning how many, think of how much technologies would get launched and then there'd be a revision a month later, a week later, a day later, 6 months later, because we could do it better, faster. And it was not, the goal was not perfection. The goal was to iteration. And I think as I'm listening to you talk, I wonder if that is, you know, they're accustomed to that. They're accustomed to, you get to the finish line through a series of iterations. You don't get, you don't start at the start and end at the end. There's 100 million stops in between, and each of those each of those are iterative goals.
Absolutely, yeah. And also to, you know, just that constant kind of like feedback and communication. Yep. We're all on Slack at 8 yep. Greens. I love Slack and how much you can progress with that quick instant feedback. And
agreed.
You know, we made that complete shift that we don't do any internal communication on email. And that's been an absolute game changer. I've found that I can just, you know, help drive the business forward so much quicker because it's these little tidbits of, you know, and it's kind of the younger, like they kind of see emails as like faxes. It's just like a, you know, it's like, what, like letters or something, you know, email, they don't really even get it. And so by, you know, me adapting away from email, using Slack, and you know, there's not a person on my team that I don't speak to several times a day on Slack, and it takes no time at all versus email.
Yeah,
was way too time consuming and just ate up too much time. So yeah, I just, if you're not using Slack in your business, it's just real or whatever, you know, similar system, really encourage CEOs and leadership to make that switch and use the tools that younger people are more comfortable with, because you can just get so much more done.
Adaptability of a CEO, that's very interesting. Mm-hmm. Usually the organization adapts to the CEO, but I'm seeing you suggesting maybe slightly going the other way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I've found it, you know, I've just found it a total game change. And I didn't really, you know, back at Calathea, we kind of did the half switch with, like, we got Microsoft Teams going and then some little fractions of the business were using it. And then they told us, like, don't use email internally, but then no one listened to that because they're like, how can you touch this? And it just didn't, we just never got there, and we still would have, you know, that problem of having 150 to 200 emails a day that you just can't ever quite, you know, feel like you're on top of. And with Slack, you just don't get there. You get through it and you're up to date and you keep, you know, even even if there's, you know, if I've got meeting conflicts, I'm like, can see what's happening in the Slack channel and keep up to date. Yes. So I'm I'm going to two meetings at once with Slack. So anyway. I promise this is not a paid ad for Slack. just sharing my thoughts.
Sure. I think email is so much more formalized. It's almost like a anything you need, something sort of somewhat formally documented versus Slack. Mm. I think especially during quarantine allows you to kind of just, it's almost like a shout over the, hey, you know, what do you think about this thing? Great. It's so informal and you can do things in bite sizes, and email requires you to kind of, oh, I need to format my sentences and my spelling needs to be right. And there's just some, I think, headspace there that Slack allows you to shed all of that. That is some holdover from texting. I think Slack is like almost like texting.
Yeah. And look, we have, you know, we talk a lot about it's a informal method of communication, but that it's business. Yeah. And, you know, for the young people, we really make sure we have, you know, the meetings about what's appropriate to share at work and what's not.
Of course.
We do all of that training just to make sure that it is a business tool and of used course. Appropriately as such. But, you know, business is changing. And when we're in, particularly now, when we're in people's homes and we're seeing their backgrounds and we're, you know, in and out. And I think that, you know, a more casual approach actually feels entirely appropriate at the moment. And I think that, you know, as I said, it's changed forever. It's changed. I used to be, I realized I had a bit of a preference for bums in seats. I definitely did. And I realized in the pandemic it was because I enjoyed the social side of it. It wasn't about the team. Yeah. It was about me. You know, I love having people around me. I'm not a, you know, how you draw your energy. I'm not like, I never crave time alone ever. I don't like it. It's not because I'm there's something wrong with me. I just don't like, I love having people around me. So I realized I wasn't really thinking about the team and what the team needs. I was thinking about myself. And I've realized now with the pandemic that, you know, it's just not necessarily, and we didn't really rethink, you know, the workspace since the advent of like the internet. We didn't really rethink it. We kind of did, and we talked about flexibility. And I've been fortunate that because I had global roles and was managing teams in the UK and the US and Australia and a lot of travel, that my traveling forced me to stay mobile. But then, you know, when it was kind of back in the office, I did definitely have a preference for back in the office, and now I still like it, but I don't believe that it's necessary.
Love it. I love this kind of checking yourself as a leader. I think that's more of that can be had. And I think we'll just kind of continue to maybe push back on some of those badges. You know, even I love walking around telling everybody how busy I am. It would be pretty great if I could get to the point in my life where I walked around and said, I worked 40 hours this week.
Yeah, bragging about how much sleep you get. I think what a goal, hey? Yeah. But I just think that it's just going to increase this connectivity with your colleagues in an informal way. I think it's great. Yeah. And I think also to the benefit from it, I think that people used to have this sort of like, I'll wait till I get in the office to do it. And I used to see that when I was managing a pretty large team at Calafia. And I think just because people, how I would be sort of, I'm going to London for 3 days, but just treat me as if I'm here. Don't treat me any different. Don't wait till I get back, sort of thing. And I think that people still had that tendency to sort of put things on hold until they're back in the office.
Mm.
And so I think that that's a positive that people don't do that anymore.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. Wow. Well, our time is almost up. I'm really good with the words today. My goodness. I have, and I love everything that we've talked about. I have a few questions that I always like to wrap up with. So these tend to be quick. The first one that I have for you is there anything interesting about your industry, whether it's 8Greens or Calafia or Chiaco, that you want to share? Something that's kind of cocktailish, like the did you knows, anything fun you'd like to leave?
Yes, I don't know how fun it is, but my husband loves, it's like his party trick. He's like, tell them, tell them, tell them. So I tell people that in the UK, if you put red food colour in something, you must write on the front of the pack that it may cause attention and behavioural problems in children. And so just think about that and seek out these products that have the red 40 in them, because you know, I just think that the awareness across the US of that is just going to need to continue.
Yes, agreed. Okay, check. I love that. All right, what other women leaders or rising stars are out there that you would like to elevate or simply admire for the work there that are doing right now?
Yeah, I am very, very fortunate to have met a lady called Denny Post. I'm serving on the board of Bluestone Lane cafes and coffee business with her, and she's just been a fantastic inspiration to me and a great reminder. It's probably been, you know, a good sort of 17, 18 years since I've had a woman really kind of, you know, pay it forward, shout out my ideas and really be really overt in her support for other women. So, shout out to Denny Post. She's definitely someone that I'm learning from, and just she then is in turn encouraging me to pay it forward to other women. That's awesome. There's another lady, Lauren Egan, who I worked with at the Chia Company, and she's been over at Sonoma Brands for quite a few years now, worked on an incubation brand called Peckish. And Lauren is,
okay.
I remember reading a Harvard Business Review article that kind of referenced how much work superstar, how much outsized impact superstars have versus just, you know, kind of the rest of the team. And it was kind of like, is it two times, is it three times? And this article referenced that really great performers can have a five times impact versus, you know, somebody else doing that role. Really? And that's a Lauren. Lauren is a five times the amount of work that she can generate in the same hours a day. It's just huge. So I think Lauren's definitely one to watch in the natural products industry. And Peckish actually just went through an acquisition, so I'm keen to see where she ends up next.
Yes, I've had my I have my ear to the ground on them for a few months now. That will be now I have a I'm 2 degrees of separation away from that, so probably will be a little bit more visible for me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tell me, what brands and trends do you have your eye on and why?
So I'm all about beauty ingestibles at the moment, so really closely watching that space. And I think that this, I really, you know, this kind of hydration and I think there's been some brands that have traded in that area and done quite well. And I do think it's something that has a lot of, you know, I think it's a really enduring proposition. I think when you look at the packaging, you know, involved in the beverage industry, and when we're looking at, you know, this sort of way to have, you know, supplementation, flavor, you know, we saw carbonated water explode out with Aquar and everything like that. But I think now when you when people start to consume, there's a lot of packaging there, and if I can just do it in another way, you know, I love the Soda Stream. I'm all about the Soda Stream and doing my own sparkling. Yeah. And so I just think this hydration space and supplementation through hydration is a real category to watch at the moment.
There's a rose water that's just coming into the marketplace. I'm going to send you the link on that. Rose water sparkling beverage that's right smack square in that space. I'll send it to you. Yeah. How are you keeping yourself centered these days?
Good question. So my my family is definitely, I have a great husband. I'm very fortunate to have a great partner, and you know, he and I are a true 50-50 in the household, and with our son Malcolm. So yeah, they definitely keep me centered. And I also bought the SoulCycle bike for my house. I'm a bit more the kind of conservative on the purse strings in our house, and my husband's like, let's go for it, let's buy three, you know, that'd be great. And I wish that I bought it at the start of the pandemic now. I absolutely love it. I love it. So definitely, big fan of the SoulCycle bike.
Oh, we bought a Peloton Tread, same, amazing.
Very pleased with your investment.
Yeah, my legs not so much, but yes, yeah.
That's good.
I'm training for my first marathon, so my legs are probably not happy with me because I'm pushing a bit harder than I have been for a long time.
Yeah, that's huge. A marathon's a big thing. I've never done one. I after basketball, I had two knee reconstructions, so I think I'm more of a bike and yoga versus running, but big admiration for everyone who does them.
Yeah. Well, my body's built for plowing fields, so we'll see how I do afterwards. I was a bodybuilder in my 20s, and my body took to that quite
amazing.
Easily.
That was the your running... natural. What's it? The body type. Yeah, that's amazing. See how you go pounding the pavement instead.
Yeah. I might be disabled afterwards and it'll be all my own doing. Oh my goodness. Hey, last question before we leave. If somebody wants to reach out to you, what's the preferred way? Is LinkedIn the best
way? Absolutely. Yeah. I'm a big fan of LinkedIn these days. So yeah, definitely please reach out on LinkedIn. That's great.
Excellent. April, thank you so, so very much for your time today. And I really appreciate all the things that you're doing. Love the insights on how you approach leadership, particularly with Gen Z. This has been a new POV, point of view of anyone that I've spoken with. So I've really appreciated it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Diana. I think it's been fun.
This episode is sponsored by Retail Voodoo, a creative marketing firm specializing in growing, fixing, and reinventing brands in the food, beverage, wellness, and fitness industries. If your Naturals brand is in need of positioning, package design, or marketing activation, we're here to help. You can find more information at retail-voodoo.com. And so there you go. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Thank you so much for hanging out with us today. And if you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to this channel and share with your network. Until next time, be well and do gooder.